basketball appointment show starts now. This is Bucks Weekly, your weekly checkup of your Milwaukee Bucks and all around the rest of the NBA. And now here's your host, Justin Garcia.
Bucks Weekly is on the air as the Bucks looking to bounce back big time. You heard from Wyatt there. They're off tonight, play tomorrow in Phoenix where they wrap up this five-game road trip. And you hope to do so at 2-3. We heard from Chris Middleton, not as if this is breaking news, but the goal was a winning road trip of 3-2. And that's the goal for any trip that you go on. No longer possible with the fourth quarter that we saw last night. And I do want to touch on that game. I know we talked about it quite a bit on Bucks Talk last night, but just listening to the reaction from fans and seeing what's been out there on social media and other places, it seems to have been a polarizing performance last night, that there's been a lot of frustration over that loss. And I get that. It's always frustrating to lose a game in the way that the Bucks did, to have a fourth quarter like the Bucks did. You gave up 40 points to the Utah Jazz. You only scored 13. You lost a game in which you led by 12 moving into the fourth quarter. Not an ideal situation. But we heard from Doc Rivers after the game, and I think more importantly, we heard from Giannis after the game as well. And they both more or less told us we're headed in the right direction. Not that you should not concern yourself with the 82 games during the regular season, but the message from Giannis was basically, I don't really care about the results we're seeing right now. What I do care about is what we're seeing behind the scenes and the way this team looks. The long and short of it was there's many things we are doing right now where we are getting better. The moment where everything clicks and our legs are there, our minds are there, and we're healthy and guys are locked in, I think things are going to go very, very well for us. That was the quote from Giannis last night after the game. Frustrating loss. We would have loved to win here. Utah's one of the toughest places to win in the league. We did a lot of good things today. The only reason we didn't win, it wasn't because we didn't execute the game plan or we didn't defend hard. We just didn't make shots. That was the message from Giannis. Doc Rivers basically reinforced that as well, saying, you know, we couldn't have scripted better shots, but everything was missing short. And again, you don't want to make excuses per se, and these are always difficult because there's no real way to quantify, yeah, they lost the game because they were tired. You can point to some of those things, right? They were missing short. It seemed like they completely ran out of gas in the fourth quarter. Understandably so. Night two of a back-to-back. It has been a hellacious stretch, not just with the road trip, but you think about the volume of games that the Bucks have played before this road trip even. And what is in front of them? They are in the midst of an incredibly difficult schedule. And I think in terms of a two or so week stretch of play, this is the most difficult that they will have. Overall, their schedule the rest of the way remains very tough. They have the second most difficult remaining schedule in the NBA. If you're just looking at opponent win percentage from here on out. Now, the team with the most difficult remaining schedule is who the Bucks play tomorrow night, the Phoenix Suns. But coming into this road trip, started things in Denver against the Nuggets, against the reigning NBA champion Denver Nuggets. Then you had a day off where you traveled to Portland. And in Portland, we've already gone through the stories, but the emotional return for Damian Lillard. You had 2 days off. One of those was travel to head to Dallas. Another one of those you spent practicing, as we heard from Doc Rivers. Then you played in Dallas, then left Dallas and went to Utah. You arrived in Utah 2 a.m., had a game that night, went through an altitude change, were without Chris Middleton and Brooke Lopez. Yeah, you lost the game, and you gave up 40 points in the fourth quarter. But I think we're at the point now where even though we're this deep in the season, you do have to look for the process just as much as you do the results. And the process that we saw over the weekend was pretty good by and large. We saw some different things defensively, right? We saw Doc Rivers overnight put in a new scheme and say, here, we're going to blitz more, and we're going to trap, and we're going to try to get the ball out of their stars' hands. And it worked perfectly. But you needed more size against the Utah Jazz, and you didn't have the reinforcements. So I think if you look at the weekend, you saw six very good quarters from this Bucks team, offensively and defensively. And that's the other part of it, is the Bucks were not making shots. They were missing short. I think they were clearly tired in the fourth quarter. And that's not just your offense that impacts. If you're not making shots, if the Jazz are getting out in transition, you're not getting set defensively. Your defense isn't quite as anchored in and coming up with those stops. So it's disappointing. And it's even more disappointing in light of what's going on directly behind you, which we'll get to in just a moment. But the process of what we've seen in these last seven games leaves me very encouraged. And what I mean by that is, look, it's not all Doc Rivers. And this isn't to heap blame on Adrian Griffin either. But since that coaching change was made, January 24th was the Bucks' first game that they played without Adrian Griffin as their head coach. So this includes three games with Joe Prunty as the interim coach, and now the four games that you've played with Doc Rivers. I've seen people point to, man, they're 1-3 with Doc Rivers. It's a very challenging schedule, and again, we knew this was going to take time. But in those games played, and I'll preface by saying this, seven games, it's not what you should jump to any conclusions over. This is nowhere near a sample size you would feel comfortable making any bold proclamations from. You need to see more of this, right? So we'll get that out of the way. But that being said, we have seen a much different version of this team in those seven games. And Doc Rivers talked about that after the game last night as well. Not only that, look, we were tired, we scripted up some good things, we just ran out of gas at the end. I think one of the more telling things that he said was, we are playing hard defensively now. And you can see that visually, but you can also see that we're fatigued. It takes some out of us to play that way. We might need to add another guy to the rotation because they're not used to doing it this way yet. But our goal is to build up that intensity with a short rotation, because that's what the playoffs are, and we're just not there yet. So in other words, I'm getting to see what I want to see from this team. I know it's only been four games with Doc, but what I'm seeing right now, I like, and that's what we're shooting for. But these guys weren't maybe ready for that, and it's still a work in progress there. But those numbers that I mentioned, while you do feel good about what you're seeing, is in these games played, since this coaching change was made, everything we've been calling for, we just mentioned how you saw a different scheme defensively. You were blitzing, you were trapping, you were getting the ball out of one specific player's hands. Giannis was taking on those defensive challenges in Dallas as well. And in the games played since January 24th, if we take garbage time out of it, the Bucks have the 11th best defense in the league. And this isn't an outlier, well, I mean, look at this stretch of play, because if you look up and down in the defensive ratings for the last 2 weeks, basically, all of the teams towards the top, it makes sense, and it's what we've seen for the duration of the season. The Timberwolves have the best defense in the league in that time period. The Oklahoma City Thunder are second. The Clippers are third. And by the way, they've maybe been the best team in the league the last 2 or 3 months, have the Clippers. The Cavaliers, speaking of very good the last few months, they have the fourth best defense. The Knicks are sixth. The Bucks are 11th. 11th best defense in the league. So it is working. They have instituted some changes. The big things are, they have clearly been better on transition. In the first half last night, the Bucks only had 4 turnovers, which is another area that has improved. They've done a much better job taking care of the basketball. In the top half, they're 12th in turnover rate on offense. In other words, percentage of possessions that end with you turning the ball over, the Bucks are 12th best since this coaching change. Their defense is 11th best. And their defense was dead last in turnovers forced for the first, 35 games of the season, however many it was before this change. In the 7 games played since then, they're 13th in turnovers. So their defense has been better in transition. To finish that point, they had 4 turnovers in the first half. The Jazz did not score any points off of those turnovers. So the Bucks are getting back in transition. They're 6th best in defensive rebounding. They've cleaned up their transition defense. They're rebounding the ball better. They're not turning the ball over. And the results show in the process with the 11th best defense. Unfortunately, you got to start winning now because of the schedule that's in front of you and because of what's happening directly behind you in the Eastern Conference. We'll get into the details of that, but coming up next, it is time to go courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks. And this week, Gail Klappa's conversation is with Bucks team president Peter Fagan. You'll hear that conversation after this on Bucks Weekly.
The next era of Bucks basketball is here.
Lillard, three-pointer for the lead. It's game time.
Giannis just inside the three-point line, working on Orlando Robinson. Spins around him, and goodness gracious.
This is Courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks.
Tonight, we'll unpack it all with a guy who's been in the middle of it all, the president of the Bucks, Peter Fagan. And our special guest tonight, who's traveling with the team, is Bucks general manager John Horst, by far the best record in the league. And Chris Middleton is a huge part of that thrill ride.
The source for the inside scoop on every dribble, drawn up play, and decision made. Now, here's your host, Gail Klappa.
Hello, everyone. I'm Gail Klappa, and this is Courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks. Take one look at the schedule. We knew it would be a tough test. A Western swing, 5 games, 9 days, a new coach, and a back-to-back in Dallas and Salt Lake. The Bucks came roaring back to clinch a win in Dallas, but in Salt Lake, a fourth-quarter lead melted away. The Bucks just couldn't buy a shot down the stretch. It's been a tumultuous year so far, but we've seen 33 wins and flashes of brilliance. Tonight, we'll take the pulse of the franchise. Our guest has played a big role in building a winning culture here in Milwaukee. The president of the Bucks, Peter Fagan, joins us here on Courtside. Peter, welcome. Always great to sit down with you.
Thanks, Gail.
Well, Peter, let's dig right in and give us your take, if you will, on the early days of the Doc Rivers era. What changes are you seeing on and off the court?
Well, I think Doc is someone who definitely has a plan and a system and a roadmap. He has been here before. It's like fascinating to watch how quickly he's acclimated. I think kind of being forced on the road right away, kind of not what I would wish somebody to kind of take on a transitional job and go for a 10-day road trip as part of it. I think he's had 1.5 practices, and as you've seen, you know, we've already seen some kind of some different schemes, some different tempo and kind of sets already in just such a short time. So he's got two or three new assistants on board, and I think this is reorganization on steroids.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, Doc's experience, as you referred to, Peter, as a head coach, speaks for itself. 24 seasons, the eighth winningest coach in NBA history. But I'd be curious, what are the intangibles that convinced the Bucks to bring Doc on board midseason?
Well, I think, you know, this was a time to pivot and to kind of have a different mode of like action, of urgency, of plan. And when we sat down and talked to Doc, obviously he's someone who is so tenured, been so successful, and really kind of has a mastery, you know, of NBA basketball. Obviously on the court, you know, as a player, as a coach for so many years, as a coach with like really kind of diverse experience, certainly has coached and managed superstars, you know, on different franchises. So I think the combination and of course of him just being, you know, a very smart, enjoyable, fun basketball person, you know, all those components really add up to, you know, what I think, you know, Jimmy and Jamie and Wes really thought about as kind of like the next chapter of really kind of, you know, how to pivot on leadership and really go towards Doc Rivers.
And Peter, we learned over the weekend, as you know, that Doc and his staff will coach the Eastern Conference team in the All-Star game later this month. I thought, Peter, that Doc's reaction to the news was classic and spoke volumes about the kind of person he is.
Yeah, I think one thing about Doc is he's direct, he's transparent, he's certainly funny, and he's just honest. You know, I think it's kind of the funny insanity of our setup and our business and kind of the All-Star game is as somebody transitions to a new coach, he would default as an All-Star coach. I think he totally understands and respects kind of Coach Griffin's success early on in the season, and that this is a weird circumstance, and I thought he handled it well as well.
He said he probably wouldn't get anywhere with an appeal to Adam Silver about not coaching. What do you think?
I think he's right.
Oh, gosh. And speaking of the All-Star game, Peter, the Bucks will be well represented in addition to the coaching staff.
Yeah, I think we're going to have a lot of fun. I think we're going to have representation of the three-point contest. We certainly have two starters. We'll have the coaching staff. I mean, I always get very excited. I care about our brand being everywhere and anywhere in good light. And certainly, you know, the weekend where the world shines on the NBA, to have so much Bucks representation is awesome.
And, Peter, we know Damian Lillard and Giannis will be starters on the Eastern team. Tell us who will represent the Bucks in the three-point contest.
Well, I think we'll have Damian Lillard and a to-be-announced other participant, which I don't think has been publicly announced yet. But my bet is going towards one of the best three-point shooters in the league will also join him.
That might be a guy named Beasley, but we'll wait and see.
That could be Gail.
We'll have more with Peter Fagan in a moment. This is Courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks on WTMJ.
This is Bucks Weekly on WTMJ. Now back to Courtside with Gail and Bucks president Peter Fagan.
Peter, let's chat for a minute about Damian Lillard. In his first season with the Bucks, one of the greatest three-point shooters in the history of the game. In your view, what can we expect to see from Dame as the season builds toward the playoffs? Do you think he will be kicking into another gear?
Without a question. I think as you watch game by game and Dame and Giannis kind of gelling better and kind of understanding how to play off each other and how to make each other better, it only will equate into Dame, you know, becoming even more unstoppable and like more of a problem for every defense in the NBA.
Sure makes sense. And last night in Salt Lake, he tweaked his ankle. Any update on his condition?
Yeah, I think he's fine. You know, he's one of those players that kind of grins and, you know, grits and bears it. He is tough. He wants to play. You know, he and Giannis are very similar like that. They want to be on the court all the time.
Well, we hope that it's not, as you say, too debilitating for him. And it looked like he came back in reasonably good shape after walking it off. And, Peter, you know better than all the rest of us, there's no question that Giannis has been sensational this season. You've known Giannis for, gosh, nearly a decade, Peter. If you will, give our listeners an anecdote that would demonstrate for you what Giannis's personality is really like.
Well, I think, you know, take the academic world. You know, I think we kind of brought Giannis in as a middle schooler. He graduated quickly to high school. He went to a very competitive undergraduate program, and he's probably now in the process of kind of accelerated into a PhD program. So, you know, I think in a very short period of time, you think about the growth and the evolution of a person and a player, you know, it's what makes him phenomenal. So, you know, this is a person off the court that is so curious, wants to learn, wants to get better, and he literally has the same vantage point on the court. I think Doc Rivers is going to be incredible for Giannis in guidance and discipline and process, because Giannis loves like being taught and being coached, and it'll be really helpful to even if you could imagine accelerate his growth even faster than it's been going.
And Peter, as you know, not only is Giannis eager to learn, but he's also very frugal with his money.
Gail, he's so cheap. He is like, he is a genius. He doesn't carry his wallet or money with him anywhere. I think his pockets are actually sewn in. Like, he actually doesn't do it. But you know what? It's like we always laugh. I always said, you know, that the really successful people I've ever met with money do not throw it around and throw it away. And he believes that. He values, you know, kind of what he makes, and he wants it to last for generations, and he's very serious about it. And I of course think it's hilarious and make fun of him any time that he's cheap in front of me.
And I understand that Giannis also believes in yard sales, Peter.
Well, Giannis, I think I told the story that had been around, but somebody asked me like, what was one of the funniest chapters, you know, in the Giannis in our Giannis decade. And I just said, you know, just to the naivete of Giannis kind of thinking when he was going to move from an apartment out in St. Francis, where our old practice facility was, to a different house, he had thought it'd be a great idea to have a yard sale until we called him and said, yeah, don't put that on social media. You'll have a few hundred thousand people, you know, literally visiting you. Maybe we can figure out how to help you out and get that done. But again, like, that's Giannis's entrepreneurial brain working. Like, he was like, hey, I don't want to move all this stuff. Like, there's some opportunity to sell something. So that's one of my favorite stories about Giannis.
Yeah, that's a great story. And switching gears, Peter, to Chris Middleton, another longtime Buck. Back in action now after a series of injuries that kept him off the court for long stretches, really, over the past two seasons. Peter, from your vantage point, is Chris playing like his old self again?
Yeah, I mean, from my vantage point, he certainly hasn't looked better in 2 years, and I think he's the secret sauce. You know, I think when you talk about our success deep into the season, certainly Dame and Giannis are going to be a focus of every defense, and the fact that you cannot double Chris Middleton is going to be a real problem for a lot of teams. And the fact that Chris feels so good and he's healthy and he's getting up in his minutes per game, I think can only play well for us. And by the way, also, like, a very big part of the glue that puts this whole team together. He makes everybody on the court better as well. So all those factors are just what makes Chris Middleton so special.
And Peter, one of the most intelligent players on the floor in the NBA.
Yeah, I think one of Doc Rivers' first comments was just his basketball IQ is so superior and so great. You know, one of the best that he's ever coached, which, as you can imagine, like, over decades, is really saying something.
And Peter, this is an important week, not only for the Bucks but across the NBA. The trade deadline now just a couple of days away. Just want to make sure that John Horst has all the caffeine he needs.
Well, you know, he seems to be good. He just got back from the road trip. He is like he always is extremely focused on how to be additive and how to be strategic and wants to do things, you know, to improve us, you know, in the short term and the long term. So I'd say John is nose to the grindstone, beyond focused. As I always say, it's a good period of 2 or 3 days to really drive him crazy on some other things because of the time pressure and the intensity. But this has always been a fun time for us, and John has always kind of steered this in such a good direction. You know, whether we've made great moves and kind of changed it or been smart and not done anything for the sake of doing something. So, like, this is these are what makes pro sports and the Bucks so much fun, is when you get to these trade deadlines and free agency and different things, you know, John Horst has his finger on the pulse and is very focused.
And we'll look forward to our conversation with John on Courtside next week, Peter. And we'll have more with you, Peter, right after this. It's Courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks on WTMJ.
You're listening to Bucks Weekly on WTMJ. Here's more Courtside with Gale and Bucks president Peter Fagan.
Peter, there's a lot shaking in the Deer District. A great new hotel is open, and soon, I understand, we'll see construction begin on a new music venue. Tell us about it.
Yeah, Gail, I think it goes to kind of directionally, you know, where we want to be. I think we, as an organization, kind of gave some of our goals and objectives and said one of them was no dark days. How do we activate in such a big way, whether it's in the arena or outside the arena? And the hotel, the trade, has really kind of been, you know, one of those additions that has changed the fabric of the Deer District in kind of building some electricity and energy with people around all the time. I think they have overperformed to date since they opened up in August, which is really exciting and really proven to be a destination. And I think, you know, that's just the beginning as we think about with Live Nation and Frank Productions to break ground in the next few weeks on a music venue that will of course, like, be just an infusion of energy and people and events in the Deer District in the years to come. And then, you know, right around the corner, we've got the RNC, the Republican National Convention, coming this summer in July, which is a game changer, you know, not just for Fiserv Forum, but the city of Milwaukee.
Yeah, for sure. And Peter, I understand that portions of the arena will actually need to be rebuilt to accommodate the convention. Tell us how all of that will work.
Yeah, the convention business is a fascinating business. We basically, you know, kind of carve out a six-week period where we rent the arena and kind of give it over to the Republican National Convention, and they have the rights to construct, reimagine kind of the interior as long as they put it back in place, you know, by 3 weeks after the convention. And, you know, what really is fascinating and what they've done around the country for conventions is it's kind of the coolest in-arena production, but as well as television production. So they really create the arena as like one of the most intimate television productions you can imagine. And if you've watched a convention, you know kind of what I'm talking about. But it's kind of one of these interesting, neat opportunities where we can reimagine spaces. We've actually been working with the RNC to think about how we can kind of redesign some spaces that they want to touch and maybe keep it after the convention. So it's kind of like one of these neat opportunities that doesn't really happen with any sort of rental or event you have any time throughout the years.
I imagine you need a pretty stable power supply, right, Peter?
We've got a great utility, Gail. I don't know if you're familiar with We Energies, but we never worry about our consistency and our energy.
Well, we'll give it our best shot, I guarantee you. And Peter, speaking of making the arena just specifically look fantastic for television, I think an example of that was the first Republican debate, the first presidential debate. Watched it on television, and the arena just looked phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, Gail, we use that as a template to start convincing other events to come here. I mean, the debate is really kind of a setup for everything from the NBA draft to music awards to kind of other awards to get it. And working with Fox, you know, we kind of took this platform of a modern arena and kind of reconfigured it into such an interesting, cool platform to get it done. So I see a lot of the same opportunities with the Republican National Convention.
Oh, that's fascinating. And 50,000 visitors to Milwaukee. Back for a moment about the Trade, the new hotel that we talked about. Had a guest come in from New York the other week. He stayed at the Trade, and he said to me, just to echo what you're saying, he said, I didn't know Milwaukee was that cool.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the Trade is voted the best new hotel, like, by USA Today. It's kind of hit, it's been on the radar, you know, nationally on a big way. I think they really spent the time and money on the design and execution. And of course, in that business, you know, it's service, and execution, and really done a great job to date. Everything from the two restaurants to the way the actual hotel is operated to the upkeep of the room. So, you know, we care about every detail, and it's really been a great, the North Central Group who operates the hotels has just done a fabulous job. And it's a difference maker in our city. It makes it even easier to become a destination.
Peter, I want to switch gears as we wrap up our conversation here tonight. A difficult question for you. Got to ask at least one tough question. As you look back over nearly a decade in your role leading the Bucks as president of both the Bucks and Fiserv Forum, just thinking back, what's the toughest decision you've had to make?
Well, I always think the people decisions are the toughest decisions. So, you know, having to change direction and maybe, you know, say goodbye to people, which is like the most emotional and toughest decisions. But it's a great question. I mean, I think, you know, for us, it's really kind of the decisions to say no and really think about, you know, one of our goals and objectives is to really everything we do it at the highest level, execute, you know, as flawlessly as we can. And there have been some opportunities to build different buildings, to execute different businesses. And some of those decisions, you know, you get very excited about the prospect and then really to kind of to really buckle down and be able to say no and really, you know, stick to your guns on consistency with where your goals and objectives are, whether it's, you know, the construction of office buildings, whether it's different tech businesses, you know, whether it's the extensions of some some of our hospitality businesses. So, you know, some of the toughest decisions are the decisions, you know, to say no. But always, always the toughest is when humans are involved and making personnel decisions.
Yeah, that's for sure, Peter. And finally, 37 games left to play in the regular season. Peter, what's your parting advice to anxious Bucks fans everywhere?
Oh, get excited. Like, we're going to constantly improve. This is a team that's going to be in the top 10 in, you know, in the next 37 games in defense and certainly in offense, and really kind of start to strengthen, you know, our pillars towards a championship. So this is an exciting time, as always, especially after All-Star, where you really start to see the team hone itself in for the playoffs.
Peter, we'll buckle our seatbelt and wish for the best. And thanks so much for joining us tonight. Always so much fun to visit with you. And you've been listening to Courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks on WTMJ. So long, everybody.
All right, our thanks to Gail Klappa and Bucks President Peter Fagan for that conversation this week. If you missed any of the interview, you can find it on our podcast. Just search Bucks Weekly. You can find this show in its entirety and that conversation with Peter Fagan this week. I mentioned what's in front of the Bucks, and look, you like the process that you're seeing. And again, the defense, seven games. We'll add that caveat once more. Seven games, you won at least 10, right? And I've mentioned this story before. Billy Donovan, the head coach of the Bulls, would oftentimes point to 10-game samples, that they viewed their season in 10-game increments of how did we look in these 10 games versus the next? Where do we see any progress? Where do we see steps backward? Other teams and staffs, you look at 20 or more games. But the point is, seven games is not the sample size that you would strive for. But it's all we have since this change was made. And the process that you're seeing has been pretty good. Again, 11th best defensively. They're causing more turnovers. They're rebounding the ball more. They have clearly been better in transition. So all of these things are trending upward for the Bucks. That is the good news. The bad news is you have the second most difficult schedule remaining in the league. And the Boston Celtics, who are currently five games in front of you in the Eastern Conference, they have the second easiest schedule left. The Cleveland Cavaliers have the 10th easiest schedule remaining. And it's going to get even easier because they just wrapped up a game tonight beating a playoff team in the West, the Sacramento Kings. So with that win, the Cleveland Cavaliers are now five games back of the Boston Celtics. Same spot where the Bucks currently sit. And more importantly, the Cavaliers have now moved past the Bucks for second place in the Eastern Conference by way of win percentage and the fact that Cleveland only has 16 losses, the Bucks have 17. So in this time, in this schedule that you've had, with this coaching change, with this stretch that you're in the midst of, you have seen the Cavaliers and the New York Knicks play like the two best teams in the Eastern Conference for basically 6 weeks now. The Knicks made up five games on the Bucks in the month of January. The Bucks went 8-8. The Knicks were very, very good. Same with the Cavaliers. And that was really the story of January, was the Bucks went 8-8. The 76ers went 7-7. For the longest time, you had the Celtics, a little bit of a separation. Then you had the Bucks and the Sixers. And then a pretty big drop-off where you saw teams like the Cavs, the Knicks, the Pacers, the Heat. Now what we've seen is the Celtics, a pretty big drop-off. And now 2 through 5. Is currently separated by two games, Bucks, Cavs, Knicks, and the Sixers. So a big challenge in front of the Bucks, and it doesn't get any easier with that game in Phoenix tomorrow night. We'll preview that matchup and get you up to speed on some other scores around the league. And speaking of Philly, the news coming out of Philadelphia, how that impacts the Bucks. We'll get to that as we wrap up the show after this on Bucks Weekly. All right, so again, the Cleveland Cavaliers, they just keep winning as they did tonight, beating the Sacramento Kings. So the Cleveland Cavaliers are currently in second place in the Eastern Conference. Both the Cavs and the Bucks now five games back of the Celtics, but the Cavaliers, by way of win percentage and the fact that they have 16 losses, versus the Bucks 17. Cleveland is now in second place in the East. The Knicks are only one game behind the Bucks, 32-18. And that's another team, just as we mentioned. The Cavs and the Knicks have clearly been the two best teams in the East since January 1st. For Cleveland, there's not really anything to point to other than their defense. They're starting to get healthy now. They just got Darius Garland and Evan Mobley back. It did open things up for Jared Allen and especially Donovan Mitchell, who have both been incredible for Cleveland. But now they're healthy and they're clicking. So they are certainly a very scary team. The Knicks, it coincides with the acquisition of OG Anunoby. That's taken the defense to a whole nother level. And Jalen Brunson is going to start to become a guy whose name is tossed around in that MVP discussion. Joel Embiid's name is going to exit that. With the news that we learned over the weekend, he is going to have surgery. The Sixers continue to be very obtuse about it, refusing to say it is a tear in his meniscus and that he will need surgery. Instead, telling us it's a flap and he'll undergo a procedure. But Joel Embiid is going to be on the shelf. How long, we still don't know. Ramona Shelburne of ESPN earlier in the season, before things came to a head here, said in talking to Embiid, this injury was similar to one he went through 2 years ago. That was a 4 to 6 week timeline, but he was going to grit it out and play through it. So between that, between the surgery, I have a hard time seeing Joel Embiid return until probably late March. So in other words, I think the best case scenario for Joel Embiid would be returning to the floor right around that ramp up period for the playoffs. And it does present one very, very interesting potential scenario for the Bucks and the Sixers. And that is what we've mentioned about the Cavs. Red hot. Now they're healthy. They're integrating pieces back in the mix. They've caught the Bucks. The Knicks are close to catching the Bucks. They already made one big move. They may make another at the trade deadline, which is Thursday, by the way. The Bucks with that schedule left, the fact that the Cavs have the 10th easiest, the Knicks have the 15th easiest, right in the middle, and the Bucks have the second most difficult. Those things don't bode well, and that's why we said, look, even though the process looks good and it's clear on the eye test, this is a better team. They're playing better now than they have been throughout the course of the season. They're not winning, but it looks better. The results aren't there, but the process is. But unfortunately, the results are going to have to get there. Given the schedule you have, given the way those two teams are playing behind you, and the schedule that they have, I have a hard time seeing the 76ers move any further up than where they currently sit. They're at fifth in the Eastern Conference. They have one of the 10 most difficult schedules left in the league. So they're going to be doing this without Joel Embiid, and they have a difficult schedule as well. It's going to be tough for Philadelphia to gain that ground. There is a scenario where the Sixers stay at five, and the Bucks, who have already been caught by the Cavs, get caught by the Knicks and finish the regular season at four. I'm not going to use the word disaster or doomsday. It would certainly be suboptimal to have that be your path, and the possibility of playing the Philadelphia 76ers in a 4-5 matchup in the first round, when in all likelihood Joel Embiid may just be freshly returned. If you get through that, you have the Boston Celtics in the second round. If you get through that, you have one of those two teams, presumably, that would have caught you earlier in the conference finals. And if you get through that, the Western Conference winner. That would be a much more challenging path to an NBA championship than what the Bucks went through when they did win the title in 2021. So the results are going to become very important here in these next couple of weeks. And again, doesn't get any easier once this road trip is out of the way. You wrap it up in Phoenix, who have also been playing very well and healthy. Then you have the Timberwolves, who lead the West, a back-to-back, 2 days off, and then another back-to-back with the Nuggets and the Miami Heat. So a very, very challenging stretch in front of the Bucks. That trade deadline, by the way, Thursday, 2 o'clock Central Time. So be sure to stay tuned for that. Bucks in Phoenix tomorrow night to take on the Suns. It's a 9 o'clock tip. 8:30 is when our pregame coverage begins. And as always, be sure to stick around after the game for Bucks Talk. We'll talk to you then.